Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, David Von Strawn and Leslie M. Scott Jones. And now, the man for whom punctuality is a virtue and a sacred trust.
Time is illusory!
Oh my God.
There is no past or present or future. There is only now.
Oh,
there was only now.
A man who believes that if you're not 5 minutes early, you're 3 hours late.
That's just CP time. I don't know what you're talking about. That's just how we do, right?
Here's David.
Von Strawn. Some respect on my name. Hello, Charlottesville! It is Sunday! It is 10:01. It is June the 2nd. It is hot AF already.
It's going to get up to the mid 80s.
It was like,
and the humidity is going to be low.
Exactly.
So if I'm saying that,
seriously, it was oppressively hot a couple of days last week.
Like, with me always as the lovely, the loquacious, the lascivious Leslie M. Scott.
So seriously, it was like I had friends calling me like, why is it Africa hot out here?
Oh, like, it was plantation hot in Virginia for like a good week and a half. No, facts. No, it was, the struggle is real out here. I don't know what's happening. And then the rain came, so like the humidity matched to it. And it just, and then Trump started doing stuff again, so it just added to the misery of all
of
Charlottesville.
There was a lot going on. Yeah.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
But we've literally weathered the storm. Speaking of storms, crazy storm.
How about that?
Yeah. But if you didn't know, I am...
What are you?
David Von Strawn, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo. Just a little guy, hairy feet, trying to get through the darkness.
Trying to get through the darkness!
Hashtag Trump's America. Let's just get into the show. Everybody knows what we've been doing. We've been talking about it for weeks and weeks and weeks. So show sold out, blah, blah, blah. Everybody know what we're talking about. But no, very few people know about this cat by the name of Eli Raybon, including myself. He is a new musician in the Charlottesville area.
That's me.
Coming to babble. And he has taken over Homegrown as being the only guest today, and I just must say, Leslie M. Scott Jones, in front of the executive producer, Clinton Johnson, Homegrown, I am a fan and a proponent of one-person guests. We get so
he loves
in
it. He
all
really
of
does.
The guests. We get to eat the pepperoni, the cheese, the crust, the dipping sauce. We get all of the guest rather than just kicking them out the door after like 20 minutes, and then we've actually like embarked on this awesome conversation. It's, we gotta go. Sorry, peace. And here's artistic events. Like, nah, man. I'm really happy. I'm really excited about this show personally. I'm really excited to get to know you.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me
taking
on.
Taking the specs. I like your style.
Are you done talking about all the things you don't like about your own show?
No, see.
Wow.
See, this is what you see. This is what he did, Eli. He took all the positive things I said about the format
negative.
Of the show.
Like,
and he made it into a negative about the regular format of the show.
Right.
And this is what I have to deal with.
Oh, my goodness.
Every time I walk in.
Yeah.
But I love him.
And what I have to deal with is, like, navigating between the two of you. That's what I do every Sunday.
I think you're a great mediator. And you're a wonderful navigator.
I just go, you know.
You are my light.
My two daddies. Please stop fighting. Daddy, don't fight.
All righty.
Both very pretty
princesses.
Can we
just get into the song so we know what this dude is about? Do you want to jump right into the song? Or
you know, I'm cool with anything.
All right.
I'm just going with the flow.
See, I
was
like going to
say, you got all day.
Yeah.
It ain't like you got stuff to do.
We have the full time slot, long form interview format.
Exactly.
There we go.
So
we can do whatever we want.
So we're just going to find out what Eli Raybon is about. Why don't you bring us into the song? Talk about what it is.
So I believe the first song that's going to be played is called "Empathy Test," and it's inspired by the, or at least the title was inspired by the sci-fi film Blade Runner. So I just took that as a starting point. And
okay, we locked love you in. Already.
You're going to hear the results.
Locked
so
in.
Let's get into it.
I'm here for this. This is "Empathy Test" by Eli Raybon and Homegrown, exclusive.
We get an accurate reading. Stop your protests. Don't try to resist. We've come to administer an empathy test.
So
David's got a lot of questions.
So I'm geeking out primarily because I am a fan of 80s cartoons primarily. Transformers,
for sure.
The movie, the first one, you know, the animated feature being the greatest movie of all time, possibly.
We
Vince DiCola, composer and musician of that, highly reminiscent.
We did a promo video, a little, you know, 1 minute Instagram promo where I believe we had some clips from the old Transformers animation stuff.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. There's one bit in there I can see now. We had, you know, a clip from the old Transformers animation, and they're, you know, they're running. And we did another one for, I have a song called Saturday Nights in Space, and I believe we took something from like a live action Transformers where they're like dancing or something. It's really weird. And we put it. You know, we had this dance this dance tune called Saturday
Night in
Space.
Maybe they're on a junkyard planet. Yeah. Maybe they're all celebrating. I don't know. Maybe I've seen that episode a few times.
Maybe.
So, analog synthesizers.
Yes.
Blade Runner.
Yes.
Retro, Futuro, you're how old?
Yeah. I'm 21.
How are you a thing?
I don't know.
How did you come to be, Eli?
Well, this throwback. Go ahead.
Well, I would say that I grew up in a household with a lot of music. Like, my dad was super influential on my music taste, and he's into everything. I mean, he's into everything. So I grew up with a lot of different things just being played in the house. And so all of the old 80s new wave stuff, I've been exposed to that, you know, my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I went through a stage in high school, really, where I wasn't all that interested in music, or my music taste hadn't really matured yet. But when I started to get a little older, get more serious about music, and get more serious about not only making music, but listening to music, I started to go back to a lot of that older stuff that was just kind of in my DNA, and sort of rediscover the 80s for myself, even though I'm not from that time period. Because I'm not even a 90s child. I mean, I was I grew up in the 2000s, so I'm pretty far, two decades removed from all of the 80s culture. But as far as I'm concerned, it's hard to beat.
I am both thrilled and incredibly sad that things that I grew up with are now being termed as old.
Well, see, that's funny.
I don't know how to react to this.
I use the word lightly, because now it seems like today it gets on my nerves. I don't really, the majority of the things that I listen to are from the early 2000s, like, or the, you know, 2002 to 2007, let's say. Like, there's a lot of big records for me that came out in that time. And to me, like, I don't think of that as old at all. But now in the modern music landscape, something that came out last week is old.
That's true.
Literally how it works now. Like, for Spotify playlists and stuff, if you release a song after it's been out a week, it's literally now deemed old, because that's just how it works now. So to me, I can definitely feel your pain, because I go through the same frustration. It's like, this just came out a month ago. How is this too old to be, you know, included in this or whatever?
And speaking of the modern music landscape, we're seeing that throwback to synth coming back with the Drive soundtrack and the Stranger Things soundtrack.
Yeah,
and
that
all
was,
of
that
this
was a big
new futurism like stuff coming out. So would you say that
retro future. If I had to put one tag on everything that I do, it's that. Because I can be pretty diverse. Like, some of the stuff that I did in the past was kind of more alternative rock, new wavy type stuff. But I still think that the retro futurism tag works. So that's a key word for me.
And this is so fun. The music that you're just creating just seems so whimsical and lighthearted.
It is. Well, yeah, it definitely... That's exactly what I'm into. There's a band called the Flaming Lips that does that really well. That, you know, they'll have a song that is I guess childlike or very whimsical, lighthearted, but it somehow manages to hit home a deeper point as well. So I don't know. I like that a lot. I'm into that.
And yet in these it's such a, at least especially a song like this, seems to be such this nice tension between how nostalgic it is, and you've talked about how nostalgia is such an important part of your approach and your inspiration, but at the same time how much of today it is, because especially in the day when we're these days when we're talking about psychopathy, when we're talking about people who are not, who do not have the ability to be empathic,
right?
And who are holding positions of power, to suddenly reach back and do empathy tests. I mean, how much of the general zeitgeist went into
So first, just to touch on the nostalgia point, it's weird for me that analog synthesizers sound nostalgic to me. I don't really get that, because, you know, it's a synthesizer. There's one in particular, the Roland Juno 106, came out in 84. It's used on so many 80s records.
I know that one.
That was the first analog synth that that I ever bought, saved up for it. And actually, I was in LA at the time, and I drove up to this guy's, I guess you would call it a house, but it was way up in the middle of nowhere. I had like no cell service, and I like, you know, plunged into the unknown to rescue this synthesizer. But it's really weird how, you know, that machine, I finally got the sound that I had been looking for out of it. It's like, mm-hmm. this is it. And why does this make me so nostalgic when I did not grow up with this? So that's an interesting point on the nostalgia. I'm not sure what it is about the old synthesizers that brings that out, but they certainly do. Mm-hmm. As far as the political implications of Empathy Test, it's funny how it turned out and how it fits with a lot of what is going on, because going into it, I was literally writing a sci-fi song based off of a you know, title that I got from Blade Runner. That's what it was, you know, and I think I do that a lot with my music. I have a song called Battery Brain, which hasn't been released yet, but it's just a good example. I wrote it, the sort of hook of the song is, I've got a faulty battery brain. So I go into it, that's the idea. It's like, I'm going to write this you know, funny, silly, whimsical sci-fi song about a, you know, an android who's, you know, slowly deteriorating and falling apart. And it turns into something that I listen to months later, and it's like telling me something about myself at that time that I didn't even realize. Like, I'm channeling things, emotions, feelings, thoughts into the music that I don't even know that I'm having when I'm writing it. You know, when I'm writing, it's like I'm writing a fun sci-fi song. And then you sit back once it's done and you listen to it through the speakers, and it's like it's telling me something, and I wrote it. So how did that happen? You know, so it's interesting.
That's crazy. That's because artists rarely think about that when they're listening to other people's music. It's how that artist is interpreting their own music.
Yeah,
and
it's
how
weird.
They're growing with it and changing with it.
You do. You grow. I think that's kind of my definition of like good music, maybe, is just something that can grow and change with you. And it's interesting.
Can we hold that thought
for sure?
Can we get to that? Can we talk? Can we get to the definition of good music?
Yeah, we'll put it on hold. Let's do it.
Do we have time for that? I don't
we
know.
Do. We have an entire hour with Eli Raybon here on Homegrown. Drop.
Good morning. This is June Heintz. I'm from the Fralin Art Museum, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. Here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
19 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown WPVC.
Are you all right?
No, this thing is over there now. So I was like, what am I? 94.7 WPVC. The progressive voice of Charlottesville. I need my cue cards like Ron Burgundy.
You need your cue cards? You can't remember the call letters of your own
system? Eli Raybon's in the house.
Hello.
We just played Empathy Test, which is an amazing tune, which is going straight into my workout list.
So we wanted to talk about the definition of good music.
Definition of good music.
I think everyone in this room has their own definition of good music.
This is me rubbing my hands in anticipation of the conversation.
What's your definition of good music?
That's a good question. I was gonna say, what I was saying was, I think my if you put me on the spot, I would just say it's music that grows and changes with you. But that's one of those things that it's true, but it doesn't really necessarily say a whole lot. So, you know, I just listen to what I like, and you know,
I guess music that doesn't necessarily like wash over the surface, that permeates the soul, so to speak.
You know, I think there's a lot of music where the artist has a goal for the music other than just like artistic expression. Like, this is made specifically so that we can get this commercial spot.
Yeah.
Or this is made specifically so that we can get, you know, in all the big Spotify playlists. And I think that would be my definition
of Mayism.
Just
targeting.
Yes.
Yeah, you can get, when you let the business side completely overwhelm the art side, because, you know, there's always a tug of war between,
true,
you know, you have the artistic side and you have the business side, and, you know, it's a balance. But when you let the business side totally, you know, yank the rope and take over, I think that's when you get not good music. I don't know. There's good music of all genres. Like I was saying, my dad is into pretty much everything. That's something he's always said.
Let's go back to Empathy Test and exactly what brought you to this particular type of music? Because like you said, you listen to everything, you grew up with everything, but you do this stuff particularly well.
I think, yeah, it's just slow.
And it looks like that your dick, I'm sorry to cut you off, but this is what I do. I ask 20-minute questions. And
I love it.
You know why? I gotta talk about the role. And you went and you went on a crusade, basically, to journey and dig for this instrument and find it in some barren basement. So I'm just intrigued by why this music, why this style.
You know, I think when I first started writing songs seriously, like when I think I was 16, so around 5 years ago, you know, I remember I had this moment. It's like, I want to be a good songwriter, and I want to be this or that or this or that. But it's kind of hard to, like, it's a difficult goal because it's so subjective. And at first, when you're first starting out as an artist, you're going to be heavily influenced by your favorite artists. It's just inevitable. And there's no problem with that. But in the beginning, before you found your identity, it's really easy to let that influence completely overwhelm you.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people starting out never get past that point where they come into their own and really, it's part of it is just, you know, practicing and doing a lot of it. And then the other part is like this sort of introspective look, like, who am I? Like, and what, you know, and I think how I arrived at this sort of music is I just played to my strengths and stopped trying to, you know, just over the years through experimentation, it's like, okay, I can do this well. I can't do this so well. You know, there's a certain type of music I realized that I just wasn't going to be able to pull off. So I remember a long, long time ago, I was a big fan of, oh gosh, I'm embarrassed to
talk
say.
Talk about it.
I'm embarrassed
speak
to say.
Speak on
what
it.
I
nah, nah,
listen.
Nah. You at homegrown right. Now. Yeah. Exclusive.
I've never talked about this before. There was a time when I would say, like, Ed Sheeran, Coldplay, you mentioned earlier. You know, those were like huge influences.
Tight
for
artists.
Me.
And
they are tight.
They definitely.
Hey,
you know,
hey,
I have
hey,
to say,
hey, back
they,
off.
They have decent
back
songs.
Coldplay, back off of my boy Chris. Songs. Back off.
I mean, yeah.
I tend to think in terms of like albums, and I will say after the dust has settled, now that my musical taste has fully matured, there is one Coldplay album, Viva La Vida.
Yes,
it's an incredible album from beginning to end. It actually works.
Really,
it works as a unit. If you put it on and listen to,
it tells a story,
and you listen to 40 minutes, you get more than the sum of its parts, and they have. Literally, it's actually pretty, I would say, praiseworthy. They were a huge band at that time, and they put out an album with, like, only one song that could even remotely be considered a single.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of that album, it starts with an instrumental, and then it goes into this. The second song has not a traditional song structure at all.
Yep.
Like, the whole, they really just did what they wanted to do as artists, and so I have to, now, Coldplay's newest stuff, but now what they're doing is
the
like they're making music to play the Super Bowl halftime show now, and at the time, you know, back when they were I don't know, in the earlier days, like I think that record came out in 2007.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The music landscape just looked a lot differently, but they did something that I think is really cool, and the whole aesthetic of that record is awesome. You know, like there's some videos of Chris Martin, and he's dressed as like a king, and like and they walking around London, and it's like. And the art style using these old paintings and stuff.
Yeah,
I still have a soft spot for that album. I can still go back to it.
I have a soft spot for that album.
A lot of the other Coldplay that I used to like worship, now I listen to them like, oh gosh, you know, I've really changed a lot. So that's what I was saying though. I used to, you know, look up to, my music taste was just different. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I realized that I'm not necessarily. I don't think I'm capable of delivering a swooning love song like Ed Sheeran, you know, or like, you know.
You never know. Like, you say your music taste is fully matured. You're only 21, dude.
Wait
till you hit 50.
I don't know. Well,
wait till you hit 50. Like, it's still going to change.
Act like you're growing and stuff.
I know,
come
right?
on, boy.
Trust me, it will change. The stuff I listened to at 21.
Didn't Springsteen put out an album at like 70?
Yeah, like, I mean, Sting is still making music, but it sounds nothing like what he was doing with the Police. Like,
I agree. Well, I don't know, at least sitting now, necessarily where else it can go, because I tend to think, I don't think I have refined taste, but this shirt, for example, is a shirt by an artist called Cat System Corp, and he makes music. It's in a genre called mall soft, and the whole point of the genre is you listen to these instrumentals, and it sounds like you're in like an abandoned mall, and you're supposed to you listen to it, and you pretend that you're in the middle of a food court at a crowded shopping mall at the height of 80s consumerist culture. So or you pretend that you're in an abandoned mall in dystopian Japan or
so
something.
Is it like ASMR or is
no,
it like-
it's think of like it's kind of like music. Yeah, it's like elevator music. Yeah, it's like
music. Are you telling me that it took us so long to get away from music,
and now it's
it took
back?
Us so yeah. long so, to get away from music, and now there's someone, of course, who is oh my gosh.
Yeah, no. It's, there's this.
This is such a comment on art Alexa, in some way, and I am not intelligent enough to know, realize.
Alexa, make me feel like I'm in the zombie apocalypse.
It's a genre. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called vaporwave. And so mall soft is a subgenre. The genre classifications get ridiculous. It's like
I'm sure
it's hilarious. But
I just call it electronic.
To me, I don't know. There's something weird. I mean, I literally can listen to music and just like pretend that I'm somewhere else entirely. It's really strange, escapist sort of stuff. But the actual music is like elevator music. So it's all about the aesthetic and like the vibe of it. It's strange. So I'm not sure. I may have matured so much that I start to go backwards. But I really like it. It's kind of a get it or you don't thing. It's very strange. It's bizarre.
It's funny how your youth has produced the music of my youth, and I'm just like never change, never ever change. Just keep doing the stuff that you're doing.
I think for me, like we were talking about the complete album, that tends to be how I think when I'm approaching a project. Like I want to make something that is like a movie. And I could launch into a whole rant on that, how everything today is single driven.
Yes.
It's all about singles. And
I want to go on a journey. And, I want to sit down and listen to something.
And so
as an artist,
that's what I want to do. I want to have 45 minutes of music that is more than the sum of its parts. And so that's what my newest album is. It's like a sci-fi concept album. So. There's this whole story, and the album doesn't beat you over the head with it. But if you wanted to, you know, there you could literally make like a comic book out of it because there's a story, there's characters, there's a narrative, and they go on this sci-fi adventure. And so that's definitely in the DNA of the album.
Well, we are definitely going to talk about that after
I also want to talk about the genres of music because I think that's something that has seriously killed music.
Yeah.
Like the sectioning off of it is a huge problem.
We gonna get into that. But for now, here are just some of the artistic events. We got music. Yep. All right, cool. Happening this week, currently running through June 9th, the American Shakespeare Center's current traveling troupe returns from the Hand of Time tour to the Blackfriars Theater in Stanton to perform the Antigone by Sophocles, 16 Winters, or The Bear's Tale by Mary Elizabeth Hamilton, and The Comedy of Errors and The Winter's Tale by Shakespeare.
Shakespeare!
Thank you. Yeah. Dude, this guy's dope. All right. Currently running through June 8th, the Royale at Live Arts. There's still a few seats sprinkled here and there. One at one show, two and two shows. See what you can do. June 5th, Jefferson Madison Regional Children's Librarian Glennis Welty. Welty or Welty? Welty. We got it right. From the Gordon Avenue branch comes to UVA's Fralin Art Museum for Pictures and Pages, where she uses movement, songs, and even puppets to connect kids to art.
Aww.
June 6th, inspired by artist Joan Mitchell, Molly Herman.
Is this to be an empathy test?
Please. Those people lead an abstract watercolor painting workshop at the Common House. There's no comma. Oh, she was inspired by artist Joan Mitchell.
Yes.
She is Molly Herman.
Yes.
She's leading the abstract watercolor painting workshop.
That's what the comma
got
means,
you.
Baby.
That's it. Got you.
Okay.
Got to put it all together.
We're going to work on reading comprehension after
you
the show.
You know, I'm just used to stage directions. June 6th, UVA Fralin Art Museum docent and former guest June Hines guides you through 45 minutes of meditative exploration of Fralin art pieces at her Looking Inward Meditative Art Tour. June 6th, Rapture hosts Drag with Come Sky DeVille at Karma's Twisted Thursday. June 7th, check out exhibit openings from these local artists on First Fridays at venues on and around the downtown mall. Radio Aria and Reef, Our Ocean's Living, Abstractions by Tina Curtis at Second Street Gallery. Works by Erin Marie O'Keefe, Amanda Wagstaff, and Mary Lamb at New City Arts Welcome Gallery. Cry of the Cicada, photographs by Bill Mousy at Chroma Projects.
I'm sorry, cicadas? Really?
Cicadas.
Okay. No, all right, I'm just saying. You know,
give it to him.
That's an interesting
cicada clap
subject. Oh my God!
The second group show by the Feminist Union of Seville Creatives, works by photographer Scott F. Smith, and the final works from 2018 and 2019 incubator residents artists, all at McGuffey Art Center. Local high school exhibits at McGuffey and Carrie Olivia.
What?
Okay, that's right. No.
Not reading that.
No.
Don't ring that.
Not.
Nope.
No, I'm not going to read it. June 7th, young writers perform their works, poetry, short story, and music at Friday Night Writes at New Dominion Bookshop. And for your music options this week, before my executive producer
hits you in the head
with a blunt object. Sorry.
Move that out of the way. Okay, today, Sue Harlow at the Batesville Market at 1 p.m. Beliza at Glasshouse Winery at 3. Charlottesville Women's Choir sings a benefit concert for Front Porch Roots Music School at The Haven. Tomorrow, the Weed Eaters at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. On the 4th, the Municipal Band of Charlottesville begins their 97th series of summer concerts with a concert at Claudius Crozet Park. On the 5th, Scuffletown at Keswick Vineyards. The Ragnarockers throw down some funky, jazzy, bluesy tunes at the Shebeen. The 77s play the music of the Grateful Dead at Rapture. You know what? I might stop by that. That's kind of cool. I haven't heard some Dead in a while. You know, take me back to my youth. On the 6th, Will Overman at Parade on a Farm Bury. The Unholy Four have reformed.
Oh.
Not just formed. They reformed to give you an evening of hard rock with what? Yeah, that. Linda.
Ex-Smashcasters.
Okay.
Ex-Smashcasters.
Linda and surf rock-inspired rockers, the Urchins at the Ix Art Park.
Unholy Four, back!
Okay. Wow, David. June 7th, Faster Than Walking at the Tombstone Irish Pub. Overdog at Glasshouse Winery. Tara Mills, Jimmy Stelling, and Michael Clem. Hey, Michael, what's up? Woo. At Front Porch Roots Music School. Yonder Phonics at the Whiskey Jar. DJ Tova at Rapture. Ow. On the 8th, Kendall Street Company at Brewing Tree Beer Company. Brewing Tree Beer? I don't even know where that is. There's a new brewery
Town? That's Mark Thompson's new brewery down on Route 151. It's been there for about a year. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I gotta go have a beer. All right. On the 8th, the Pollocks at Batesville Market, Lockjaw, Dirty Nellies, all through June?
June 8th.
Oh, it also June 8th. DJ Groomatic at Rapture. Every Sunday, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Seafoot! Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music. Weekly Open Jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Tango Music with Miles Pierce and Betty Metcalf at the Bebedero. Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. Onyx Manor at Rapture. Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. Lewis Smith and Friends at Fellini's. The Traditional Session at the Ting Missile Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, Mike Krasinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Wednesday and Thursday, Josh Mayo's Open Mic Night at 1221 Market Street. Bachata Fusion at the Rabbit Hole. Every Thursday, Humberto Sales and Vincent Zorn do Gypsy Rumba at the Bebedero. And
every Thursday.
John Durth at Miller's. All right, that's
some
stuff,
but not all of the artistic events going down in your new and burgeoning Charlottesville. We'll be right back with Eli Raybon. This is Homegrown. Cheer up!
This is Jamal Milner, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
35 minutes past the hour, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, right?
Yeah. Where have you been?
Oh,
we have been worried, sick.
See what you
We're
did.
About to call people. I mean, killing I was listening. I just, you know what? I don't know what to do with you. I don't know what to do with you.
Eli Raybon.
The joke is never dead. I'm a black mama. I gotta be a black mama. Like, that's what they do when you come in after curfew.
Music. Journeys.
I'm gonna. I gotta real quick before I forget. I have to launch into a singles versus albums rant really quickly.
Okay,
do it.
Break this down.
Make that happen.
So, like we were just saying, we obviously share a mutual appreciation for albums that tell a story or are more than the sum of their parts.
Yes.
And that's something that you just don't see as much today. And part of that is it's just the way that the music industry is right now. More people are streaming singles from playlists than they are buying records. So, you know, it changes and whatever. But for me, a single would be like, so imagine you're watching this, or okay, let's say a new romantic comedy comes out, okay?
Okay.
A cheesy romantic comedy, or maybe it's a great romantic comedy, who knows? You know, what people would tend to do is, you know, go to the theater and watch it. And, you know, they would watch the whole thing. A single to me is like if you take out the kiss scene at the end where the couple finally gets together and you just show people that.
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait a second.
Yeah, on that
how did they get
game?
There?
Who are these people? Why should I care? What's up? You don't go on the journey.
Right.
And so I'll have a chicken a la carte and roll credits and that's it.
Exactly.
I'll have what she's having.
I'm not sure
if that analogy quite touched down in the end. But
that works. That landed. That's so
landed.
Landed.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you wanted to talk about how genre classifications are making a mess of things.
Because
I agree.
When I was growing up, you know, I listened to a lot of radio in my house. Like if my father wasn't playing his vinyl, yeah, we were listening to the radio. But the station that we were listening to, it wasn't like classified like a R&B station. It was just music. And and there would be all different kinds of music. So I was exposed to a lot of different things, but it was from the mainstream that I was exposed to that.
For sure, yeah.
And it seems like now the lines that have been drawn for genres are actually like separating people from music that they could get something out of, right?
Yeah.
Because people say, I only listen to R&B or I only listen to rap or I only listen to folk. And it's like, but don't you understand? Like they all came from the same place. Like they all grew from the same root.
Right. You know, from an artist's perspective, it's difficult too because I would say my music has elements of several genres. And so that presents a whole new set of challenges when trying to get the music out there, because one of the biggest ways that people discover new music now is on Spotify playlists.
Yeah.
And those playlists, those playlists tend to be, and I do the same thing. I like Spotify gives me like a daily mix of like stuff that thinks I will
like. My daily mix.
And once the algorithm gets to know you well enough, the recommendations tend to be spot on. So
they are surprisingly
good. And when you're listening to
damn you Spotify
to like really niche genres like vaporwave or something, that music tends to be kind of anonymous. Like there's no one's signing their name to it. They would be some they'd be like Windows 96 or Macintosh Plus, or there would be some obscure name, and the artist every time they release an album is going to be under a different name, so there's like no ego attached to it. For something like that, it makes sense maybe to just put it in a playlist, because the whole point is you listen to it once and then it's gone with the wind and you never hear it again. Mm-hmm. But Spotify playlists tend to be like very genre specific. Like they draw the line.
Yeah.
You know, we are only going to put this type of music in this playlist. And so as an artist, if I'm drawing from several different genres, it becomes a nightmare when trying to get any traction, because it's like, I don't even know how to pitch it. It's like, is this, you know, synth wave? But those people are like, oh, no. We have a very specific, checklist of formula. We have a formula to make this music. And if you don't check all of the boxes, then you're not synth wave. You're not this genre. And
right.
Like, okay, well, maybe it's synth pop. But then that tends to be a lot broader. And so now I'm competing with, like, more mainstream pop acts. It's like, well, I'm not really doing that. I'm writing a song called Empathy Test, and it's talking about your synapses under stress from an empathy test. It's like, that's not really going to compete with a, you know, like a true synth pop artist. So it puts me as an artist in a strange position where it's like, you know, I'm just making music that I like, and it has elements of a lot of of other kinds of music that I like. And since the genre lines tend to be drawn, cut so deeply, they it can be weird sometimes.
Yeah.
Or awkward.
But I would feel like, from an artist's perspective, that you get more of a chance to expose yourself with that vehicle. Because can't you just check all the boxes and, like, be thrown into every Daily Mix, per se?
Yeah. Well, it's weird. It's one of those...
I mean, the point is to be heard.
Yeah. Once the algorithm likes you, it becomes, like, really easy. It's actually funny. It's a weird catch-22. There's a lot of those in the music industry. But, yeah, it's like, once you start to get a little traction, then Spotify will pick up on it, and they will start to gather a bunch of data and say, okay, people who like this artist and this artist and this artist are all listening to Eli Raybon. So now we're just going to start putting this in, you know, everyone who listens to these three artists, Eli's song is now going to go in all of their Daily Mix playlists. And so, yeah, the computer definitely can help you. Mm-hmm. But starting out, it can be sort of awkward. Like, you know, and it's really weird because when a song first comes out, the computer's like, you know, hyper-analyzing the numbers. And it's like, if you're not getting this many streams in the first week, then the computer's like, okay, that one's a dud. We're going to ignore that. So it's really strange how it all works.
Oh, my God. The Spotify algorithm has recreated middle school click culture.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who are you? I don't know you. You can't sit at this table.
Yeah. it's weird.
People who like this person also like this person.
Yeah. It's Heathers.
Yeah. It is. It's really weird. Like, the new technology has definitely made things way more accessible. Like, I would have no way to get my music out there if it wasn't for the technology. But it also introduces, like, a bunch of new, I won't call them problems, but just things that you have to be aware of, like, when you're trying
to
navigate.
Opportunities.
Exactly, yeah. It gives you a lot of opportunities, and it also gives you a tyrannical algorithm to battle with. So, you know, it's good and bad. Nice. I tend to focus on the negatives of, like, Spotify and streaming just because it's more interesting.
Right.
But it's actually, I mean, it's very convenient. And I use the platforms, too. I just want to be able to put a record on at the end of the day and experience my albums, you know, too. And I'm sad that has diminished. But
you should title your record "Listen to the Entire Record" and not just a single.
Yeah, you know, it was a funny thing. Initially, I didn't even want to do singles at all for this album, but it just makes, with the way that the industry works, you're just kind of like stupid if you don't, because every time you put out a single, that's another chance for playlisting opportunities. And if you put out the whole 10 songs at once, then a week later, all of those 10 songs are old news. Where if you release them one at a time, then you get like quadruple bursts. The chances to make something happen. Yeah. And you really just need one thing to catch on. So, So, you know, I went with singles and it ended up working out. It's fun to release music. So the more frequently, you know, if I can be putting out something every month, that's kind of cool. So,
yeah.
That single got me hooked, man. Empathy Test. Now I got to check everything out.
Do we have a second song to listen to?
We may, but we got to do, pay some bills first. Let's do that. We'll be right back with Eli Raybon. This is Homegrown Drop.
I'm Paige Naylor, local Charlottesville musician, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
46 minutes past the hour, if you're just tuning in, this is Homegrown, but Eli Raybon just dropped some news on us.
Right.
This is craziness. Say it again. Say it again while we were on commercial, but say it again for the podcast.
So, yeah, all of my songs are written on acoustic guitar. I don't write on synthesizers or... I don't write with any of that in mind at all. I wrote all of the songs but one. Every song on the album except for one was written with just me and an acoustic guitar.
That's crazy.
That's how I tend to work. And all of the synthesizers and sci-fi elements, you know, it makes sense to present it that way because it's a sci-fi album. You know, I'm singing about the future and androids and battery brains.
Now,
and so
now you need to do an unplugged, just you and a guitar, dude.
Well,
but what is it about that process that helps you put it all together?
I don't know. I think it's just for one, that's where I started. Like, I started, that was when I was 12. You know, like I said, my dad's been a big influence, so he's a guitar player. So I used to watch, I've watched him play guitar, you know, since I was like, you know, I was born. We have video, like home cassette, high eight video of me with like a toy shovel, like pretending like I'm playing guitar. And when I was 12, I went to him and I was like, hey, Dad, I want to learn to play guitar today, thinking it would be like a few hours and I'd be like a rock star or something.
We'll be good, right?
And that was the start. So I started to learn acoustic guitar, and that's really been the core of everything for me. You know, I think as an artist, I'm most interested in songwriting and song structures and arrangements, and you know, how can you use the traditional verse chorus bridge chorus to do something interesting, or how can you break that and throw that out the window and do something totally weird? You know, everything I do starts with an acoustic guitar, and then it becomes a question of like, okay, what's the best way to present this music? And so that's when the synthesizers come in,
which you do so well. We got to do another track before we get out of here. We got The Moon Is Made of Cheese queued up. Are you okay with that?
I'm cool with it.
All right. This is The Moon Is Made of Cheese by Eli Raybon on Homegrown.
is so cool.
Stop making such fantastic music. I'm blowing my mind. You're like...
So we only have a few minutes left, but I want to throw something out there.
Yeah, let's do it.
I want to talk about the your use of theatricality in your performances. Because as you perform, so you just went to South by Southwest.
Yeah.
This dude just came from South by Southwest.
Right. Oh, like you do.
Like you do. Yeah. Like you do. And these days, you're performing in... We'll talk about what your performance persona is.
Yeah. So I basically go on stage in a lab coat and this homemade battery brain contraption, which is basically we took the I got a lot of help with it. I can craft things with notes and lyrics and stuff, but when it comes to actually like doing something hands on, I'm not the best. So I had this idea, it's like I need a battery brain headpiece. And so my dad was like, okay, we're going to take the inside of a construction helmet and then put these two big 9-volt, maybe these big square batteries on the side and connect them with a bunch of wires.
Oh,
anyway, we ended up with something that looks like hilariously awesome. You see, you can see it. So when I'm on stage and the lighting's right, all of the you know, the glue holding it together and the tape and the glue, it all just kind of disappears and you just see this like cheesy 80s sci-fi prop. So it's really great. So I think theatrics are important to me because with this music especially, like, it just, when you're performing it live, it begs you to have fun with it and to be theatrical. And so that's what my live show is. You know, I go on stage dressed as a mad scientist and I have a mad scientist meltdown.
All right.
I have a bunch of synthesizers and, you know, they make a bunch of weird noises and I kind of prance around and flail around like a lunatic and sing these sci-fi songs. It's a lot of fun.
So I have to ask. I've been sitting on this whole show and going back and forth whether or not to ask, but I gotta. So in terms of all the music that you listened to, you had to have listened to some Thomas Dolby.
Yes, and that was actually one. It's weird. It's weird with music. I remember, you know, hearing like "Blinded Me with Science." I knew that song before. When I went back and listened to it later, like when I was, when my music taste was maturing and I'm rediscovering 80s new wave, it's like, oh, I already know this song. Like, I already know this song. You know, I could, you know, quote every little keyboard sound or whatever. So, Thomas Dolby is an influence, but it's one of those weird things where I kind of rediscovered his music after I was set on a path, and it's really weird. There's a lot of groups like that. So Thomas Dolby, there's a new wave group called the B-52s. There's... Yep. And the
you know that small group,
that
perhaps
you've
heard
group.
The B-52s, for one, I was doing this sort of wacky alternative rock stuff before this, and when I heard the B-52s, it's like, wait a second, like, yeah. I love this because this, like, you know,
this is awesome.
It sounds like something I would do. So there are some artists where you would think they would be an influence, but just growing up in the time period that I grew up, I didn't grow up listening to them. I sort of rediscovered them later. It's like, oh, we're like kindred spirits. You know, we're doing something similar. So
yeah, actually, the guy who did the drum beat for one of the B-52s. Biggest hits. Mm-hmm. He's like a legend R&B drummer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, and actually, Ivan and I were just talking about it like 2 days
ago.
That's
cool. I forget about the stuff that he's done, but he's got an amazing discography. But we got 1 minute. Talk about what you're doing next. Where you'll be, what you're doing, press,
the next
Instagram.
The next
Insta
upcoming,
post,
well, first of all, Hive. I'm pretty easy to find online. If you just type in Eli Raybon, there's not a whole lot of Eli Raybon, so... I had the SEO on lock. I completely dominate the search results. So I'm at Eli Raybon on everything.
And make sure you mention the album that you're working on.
Yes.
Super Toys.
So Super Toys, which is the this sci-fi concept album that we've been talking about, and all of the music has been from. It releases on July 12th, so I'm excited about that. And on July 3rd, I have a show in Fayetteville, West Virginia, at a venue called The Grove. And I'm doing a joint show with a visual artist named Craig Snodgrass. And we complement each other very nicely, if I must say. He does paintings and art of robots and sci-fi landscapes. And so we're doing a... Snodgrass. Yeah, he's pretty popular around here. So so we're doing a joint show.
West
and
Virginia.
That's July 3rd in West Virginia. If you're listening and you book music, please book a mad scientist to come have a meltdown at your venue.
Because
I'm still relatively new to the area, so I don't have an overabundance of connections for sure. And my sell isn't exactly the easiest. You know, getting people. My pitch is literally like, okay.
Well, a lot of people don't realize West Virginia, capital of new wave 80s theater synth pop.
What?
It's true.
Well, that's what I'm going to be bringing there. So
I want to thank Eli Ray Ron for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is
thank everybody
blast.
For being here. Much love, Clinton. Love you, Leslie.
Love you too, baby.
All right, this is Homegrown. We're going to be out. We'll see y'all next week. Take it easy.
Peace.
Adios.
This has been Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. Thank you for listening to us. We'd like to thank our guests, of course, Eli Raybon. Our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music was from Blade Runner. And right now, we're listening to Wayward Gyre from Eli Raybon. Any complaints about Homegrown should be dedicated to or directed to our attorneys at the fine lisping law firm of Tuckerman, Overman, Munson & Burke, legal therapists that wrap around you like a thong. Remember to keep your dial on 94.7 WPBC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. See you next week.
PVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.